So the marketing for us is really simple. Just a lot of direct mail. We send postcards. I have this secret postcard that's just working like crazy right now. If you go, I don't know if I should say, but I will anyway. If you go to Google and just do a search for...
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
Joe McCall, what is going on, buddy? How are you?
Brian, good to see you, man.
Good to have you, buddy. You and I just connected via the podcast sphere. You have a show that I listen to, and you've been going super, super deep and tactical into land investing. So while your podcast covers all things real estate, and you've been doing it for 11 years, more than 11 years now, I'll allow you to pitch the show. But I love the show, and now you get tactical on buying dirt, building a little dirt dynasty over here. And there's not many shows that I've seen that are hitting on that besides my buddy Ron and Dan Apke, giving them a quick shout out. And so you're doing interesting things in land and real estate investing. You're traveling around the world with your four kids. I'm excited to have you on. For people that do not know who Joe McCall is, who is Joe?
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be on your show, Brian. I've been watching you, what you're doing, and it's really cool. Your enthusiasm to do daily podcasts like you're doing, it's intimidating. That's awesome.
It's because we control the guests. That's why.
I've been doing real estate full time since 2009. I was a civil engineer, making good money, but I hated living in my cubic hell, as I called it. And I wanted to just work for myself. So I started flipping lease options at the time, where you get a property under contract as a lease option, and then you flip that lease option to a tenant buyer, and then you're out of the deal. So I started doing a lot of creative financing deals, owner financing, subject tos, lease options. And then I started doing wholesaling in 2012, like cash wholesaling for houses. And probably about 4 years ago, I transitioned into doing flipping vacant land because I wanted something that I could do with my boys. I have four kids, two boys that are almost 20 and 18, and then two girls that are 15 and 13. And we homeschool, so it's not that we're anti-public school. We're just pro-homeschool. We want to be able to travel. We want the freedom to go live anywhere in the world we want. So I really wanted to design a business that was like, my intention ever from the beginning was not to have a huge business, but to make a lot of money to live my lifestyle that I wanted to live, wherever we wanted to live it. Simple business, low overhead, high profit margins, could be run virtual from anywhere in the world and wouldn't take a lot of capital to start, wouldn't need a lot of to take on debt to get going. So I've always been like more of a lifestyle guy. I like to talk about it in terms of designing a vision for your life first and then designing a business around that. So many of us have it backwards. We have our business or our job at the center and every life fits in around that. I wanted to reverse it. And I wanted a way to say, you know, what do we want to do with our lives? And I don't want to wait till I'm traveling around the world when I'm in my 60s after I quote unquote retire. I want to go see the world now with my kids. And if we're going to homeschool them, why not take them to Greece instead of teaching them Greek history or Roman history? Let's take them to Rome. Let's take them to all these national parks in the northwestern corner of the U.S. for 3 months. Let's just go do what we want to do. And why not? Why do we have to be stuck in one physical location? Let's run this business virtually. So anyway, that's a long intro, but I wanted a way from the very beginning back in when I started studying real estate in 06 and 07, 2006 and 07, nobody really was doing virtual wholesaling back then. And I remember hearing the young kids at the time, they were in their 20s, talking about this concept of virtual wholesaling. And I remember the old style, the old gurus were like, you can't do that. That's ridiculous. You could never do that. And there was this rift even back then between the young wholesalers and the experienced guys. But I chose to believe the young guys at the time. And I thought, man, why not? Why can't you do this? Why can't you do deals virtually without going to actually see the property, without actually talking to the seller in person? And so that was starting my whole journey. And I don't know the last time I went to go look at one of my deals was probably 10 years ago.
Wow.
10 years ago.
Wow. So during that process, did you keep any as rentals? Did you keep any long-term buy and hold, or were you just purely focused on profit cash flow from the active wholesaling and land business?
Yeah, man, I sold my last rental probably 5 years ago. I'm a disillusioned landlord. Let's just put it that way. And fair. There is a place, time and a place for owning rental properties. And I'm just not that guy. I bought a bunch of houses subject to an owner financing with bank financing. When the market crashed in 2009, between 2009 and 2011, I lost almost everything, almost went bankrupt, lost my own personal residence to a short sale foreclosure. It took me 7 years to repair my credit to get it good enough to where I could get a mortgage and finally buy a house. So I was forced to get creative. But one of the things I loved about wholesaling, now wholesaling, if you guys don't know, it's just like you get a property under contract to buy it, and then you sell that contract to somebody else. You're just in and out of the deal real quick. And when I was getting started, man, I looked down on wholesalers. I thought, man, that's for beginners. That's for rookies. That's for people that don't know what they're doing. I want to be an experienced, smart, professional investor. I'm going to buy and hold a bunch of rental properties. And I thought the key to escaping the rat race was getting as many rental properties as you could, that cash flow, $100, $200 a month. And that was the goal, right? And then you get 100, 200 of those, and eventually you pay them off, and then you refinance, and you get more, and you get more, and you get more, and you get more and more debt. But the problem is you can't eat equities, as mm-hmm. one of my early coaches used to say. And wholesaling, I realized, pays the bills. Like, wholesaling is the fastest, easiest way to make a quick $5,000, 10 grand. You just do one. Our average profit on a land flip right now is $10,800. And it would be nice to have $10,800 a month coming in passive cash flow. It is nice as well to flip a deal, make a quick 10, 20, 30 grand, just like that, out of nowhere, out of thin air. And so then you could say, if you stop wholesaling, you stop making any money. True. But at the same time, you can set up your wholesaling business where it's almost just as passive as a rental portfolio business. So there's a place for both. I just wholesaling, always have. Now we probably sell 25%, I'd say 10 to 20% of my deals, land deals, on owner financing. So I'm trying to get slowly back into the cash flow game, selling land with owner financing. But I like wholesaling. And I also have my publishing, coaching, education business that is a cash cow, and I love doing that as well.
If I would have asked that question a year ago running this podcast, that would have floored me to hear what you just said, candidly, because I was a buy and hold guy too, through and through. I'm like, I would never sell a property. Why would I, unless you're taking it from my cold dead hands, you're not taking my property. Cash flow is what gets you out. Rich dad, poor dad. We read the books, we do the things. After I too have sold my properties, and now I too am focusing on this would be constituted as active income. And it has assured me a level of freedom in my life that rental properties couldn't even bat an eye at.
Yeah.
So
and
I completely.
Isn't that crazy? That's not the normal thing. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I thought the key to getting out of the rat race was to get into a ton of debt. And it's not a bad debt, good debt conversation here, but get as much.
No, it's interesting. It's a good perspective.
I just looked at it with this dread every single month I had to make $10,000 to $15,000 in mortgage payments. And it just scared the crap out of me. And any cash flow that I would get from my rental properties, I would try to save as much of it as I can. But one vacancy, one water heater would wipe it all out. And when you're using property management companies, what a lot of people don't forget is these property management companies will charge you 1 month's rent as a fee to find the new tenant.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So not only did you lose the 2 or 3 months of not getting any rent, you're losing another month in fees to the property management company, and you're losing another couple months in rent income from painting and carpet and cleaning up the place. There is a time and a place for owning rental properties, but you can't count or you can't expect to live on that cash flow. And I think most people underestimate the amount of future capital expenditures that are needed on rental properties. It takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of money to keep these properties nice. You're going to have vacancies, and it's not just enough. In the typical formulas for calculating cash flow, most people, I'd say 95% of the people, way underestimate how much it actually really costs them. If you're going to do rental properties, that's fine, but don't expect to make any money off of them until they are paid off. That's my philosophy now, right?
I actually wholeheartedly agree with you, because I just went through that and I had a co-living property. It was cash flowing me net. And we're accounting for people that are listening. Please remember that Joe is not new to this game. He runs a podcast for a decade of real estate investing. We've talked about it over and over again. And even with my co-living property that was printing out $2,000 net, that's after the 20% of PITI, CapEx, vacancy repairs that you're setting aside. The tenant had to be evicted. She trashed the unit. I had a tree down in the backyard she didn't even tell me about because I was remote. And I go in and I'm like, this is $12,000 to repair this. That's just wiped out 6 months of the cash flow without even paying anybody to manage the property. So long story short, we'll get on into land investing here too, because I love a really important thing that you said that I want to pull out of this is that you run your business like a freaking business. You're running a wholesaling business, a land flipping business. You are not a land flipper. You are not a wholesaler. You run an operation. And so I think that is a key distinction that we'll talk about, how to make the pivot from an investor to a business owner here so that you do have your sense of passivity back. But first, I'll say what I'm doing and see if you agree and echo this. So right now, I think that we're in the same page where I sold mine. I'm sitting on cash. I'm building up Action Academy and everything that's associated with this podcast into a cash flow machine. Up to by the end of this year, we'll probably be about $3 to $5 million a year in cash flow, top line, gross, not net. But at that point, we'll have enough in reserves to begin deploying a strategic percentage of that back into tangible assets, which we're going to be doing through boutique hotels, real estate, international assets, and some domestic as well. So it's just, I think that is a better path to take, is leading with cash flow and then building the assets on the back end. But I also have heard people that are good friends of mine that have flipping, Jay Scott, even who wrote the book on flipping houses. Yeah, he says, if I could go back, I would have just kept 25% of them as rentals and then done the rest of them. Basically, I don't even deal with those anymore. I do commercial now. So I'm curious about your perspective on that.
Man, there's so many things that I wish I could do, but I just don't have enough time. So I think a large part of this is, what do you really love doing? There's probably people listening to this who love rental properties, right? They love single family homes. They love mowing the grass. They love replacing toilets and faucets.
They love mobile home parks. They love multifamily. They love short-term rentals.
So yeah, but for me, that's not my gig. For me personally right now, where I'm at in my life, I really love helping other people learn the business. I love doing my podcast. I love coaching. I have courses that I sell. We have software that we sell. We do done-for-you marketing services and stuff like that. I get much bigger kick out of doing coaching calls. It sounds as strange and as that odd as that sounds. A lot of people hate coaching calls. I love doing coaching calls. I love taking somebody who's scared, who's, I don't know where to start, and giving them a real clear plan and then holding them, coaching them accountable and holding them accountable to that plan. And so that's for me. My information publishing business makes me a lot more money than my real estate business right now. Yeah. So, you know, we'll do $2.5-3 million a year, but I just got back from golf. I golfed for about 2 or 3 hours today. I only work probably 20 hours a week in my business. And I have 3 full-time employees in the US and 3 virtual assistants in the Philippines. So for the revenue that I'm doing in my business, I feel like I'm doing pretty good and it's not stressing me out. We'll do a couple deals a month. I'm stockpiling cash. I'm working hard right now to pay off our mortgage on our house. I want to have a free and clear property for our own mortgage, just for the peace of mind for us,
sure,
for me. Because I know if the economy goes to crap, if my business falls apart, if the government shuts me down for whatever reason, or YouTube kicks me off of their channel, Apple kicks me off the podcast, whatever, I have a free and clear house. I'll be fine. But so anyway, that's for me where I'm at. I wanted to sit down and I said, what does my dream business look like? What could I do and not even have to, if money wasn't an object, what would I love to do? And so for me, it's the education business. It's running masterminds and coaching and selling info products and marketing. I really love that. I enjoy it. And I do the deals because I want to stay sharp and I want to know how to do deals so I can help other people do deals. One of the things that's interesting, and I don't talk about this much, but I have a business completion challenge in my program. So when you go through it, I'll refund your money after you complete the program, whether you do a deal or not. If you just go through the modules and then make at least 50 offers and you have 6 months to do it, I'll refund your money. I've refunded almost $600,000 in the last 4 years doing this. My goal is to do $1 million. And people are like, why on earth? What are you thinking? The reason I do that is because, number one, it's a lot of people bring me deals. It's one of the ways that I do deals. People bring me deals. We fund them. We'll partner with them, JV on them, and flip the deals together. The other reason is it's a way for me to invest back into my community and reward people who take massive action. And this has a huge compound effect because now I've got raving fans all over literally the world. People that have bought my program that are telling other people about me. And I have thousands of testimonials. And as weird as it sounds, I enjoy doing that so much more. So I make a lot more money, to answer your question, on the info part, the publishing part of my business, than I do in the deals.
Sure.
But I'm taking a lot of this cash flow that I'm getting from my businesses, and I'm paying off our house, which is a big, nice house. I'm paying it off and seeing where I can go. Maybe sell this info business, you know, for a large multiple in 10, 15, 20 years. I don't know.
Yeah, sweet. So let's go into the frameworks, man, because what you're talking about, how you're doing it today, I love it, but it could very easily be screwed up. And somebody can end up leaving their job and then end up replacing a 40-hour work week for a 100-hour-a-week hellhole. And we've seen that over and over again. And that is not what we want for the listeners. So let's talk about land for the next 15, 20 minutes, and especially how you implement what you call the MAD framework. What is the MAD framework when it comes to land investing?
Yeah, MAD stands for marketing, automation, and delegation. And I didn't make that up. I don't remember who I learned it from originally. But I've always said that we're not in the real estate business. We're in the marketing business. And if you can understand marketing, you'll never have a financial money problem in your business ever again, because leads are the lifeblood of your business, no matter what kind of business it is. So if you can get marketing done for you in spite of you, or it just happens all the time, then your pipeline is always going to stay full of leads and you're always going to be making money. If you are I've discovered this a hard way, because I was doing a lot of marketing, getting a lot of leads, getting deals under contract, and then shutting my marketing off so I could sell these deals that I had. And then I turn around 3 months later and I sell the deals, not all of them, some of them I couldn't sell, but I turn around and I make a bunch of money, but my pipeline is completely empty. Mm-hmm. And I was going through these vicious up and down cycles of not having consistent lead flow. And my revenue was all up and down all over the place. Very stressful. So I learned early on, I needed to get somebody else to do marketing for me in spite of me. So it just got done. And I started hiring virtual assistants to do my marketing for me. I started hiring vendors, other companies to do my marketing for me, and just set it on autopilot. And that really had a huge impact on my business and the amount of money I was starting to make. The second part is automation. And that's all about creating software systems, having things in place that just make so nothing falls through the cracks, like no lead left behind. That's one of my most important philosophies in the business. So I'm a big fan of this software called FreedomSoft. And it's not 100% perfect, but it's the best CRM that I've found in the real estate space. And everything comes into FreedomSoft and it manages 95% of everything for me. So having that automation in place, I tried creating my own software. And I discovered, man, I'm not a SaaS guy, right? There's creating software is one of the most difficult businesses you could ever do. But I found a good software, got the guy to customize it. Now I'm selling it as an affiliate. I use it. I sell it as an affiliate, and I'm getting very good income from that, multiple five figures, selling it as an affiliate. So anyway, that's the automation. Now, sometimes whatever you can't automate, you need to delegate, as I say. So sometimes the best automation is a good virtual assistant. You get a virtual assistant to manage the marketing for me, the systems and the software, and then just make sure it all gets done. So this whole kind of evolution of how I came into this is we wanted to travel to Europe for 3 months, and I have four kids, my wife and our four kids. We went, and I was doing probably at the time 8 or 10 deals a month. And it's just working really hard, but I felt like I wasn't making enough money and I was just didn't enjoy it. I was doing a lot of deals, but not profiting much. I wasn't keeping much.
Sure.
So I made a list of everything that you have to do in a deal. And I asked myself a real simple, profound question. And I encourage everybody to ask themselves this question. All right, these are all the steps to do a deal. How can I do none of this? How can I get somebody else to do all of this for me? All of it. And so I started writing down, okay, I could have a virtual assistant do this. I could have a local US assistant do this. I could have this direct mail company do that. And then I started partnering with other wholesalers and other investors. And I started JVing, partnering on all of my deals. And I started doing more deals, believe it or not, doing that by partnering with other people. And so, yeah, I was splitting the pie, but I had bigger pies and I had more pies to split and I was working way less. So I fell in love with this whole concept of setting up the automation that does the marketing, has the delegation part of it is virtual assistants. I have US-based assistants that kind of manage it all for me. And then I'm just operating it at a higher level, checking in once a day for a little bit. And then I created it where my sons, my teenagers can run the business without having to, you know, talk to sellers and go look at houses or go look at vacant land and things like that. So that's my evolution and journey. And we did twice. We've gone to Europe for 2 to 3 months at a time with our kids. Once we went on a 3-month RV trip in the northwestern corner of the United States and just had a blast. And yeah, right now I play a lot of golf too. And I do work hard, but I'm still only working probably 20 to 30 hours a week.
Nice. So let's talk a little bit about the marketing side of this, the M and the MAD, the MAD framework, because that's going to be everyone's first question. We've talked about Lane on this podcast before, and especially about like, if I were to, you know, go from zero and I had to choose between wholesaling a piece of real estate, a property, and wholesaling land, I would go flip this raw land all day, every day over wholesaling property. That is what I would personally do. Just from the differences in seeing it and even being like a capital partner of it, it's just such an easier conversation. The acquisition is simpler. The disposition is simpler. The process of selling this is simpler. You're just like, hey, like, here's all the comps. Like, we know that we're going to get this. We don't have to do anything crazy with it. And there's not as much competition. I freaking love it. But everyone's question that they're going to ask is, okay, I want to start buying some raw land. So how do I build the marketing machine? So we'll start with that.
I love direct mail because with direct mail, you can target specific, you can target the people you want to buy properties from. I could say, give me all the vacant land that's between 1 to 20 acres in this county that's owned by somebody who's owned it for over 10 years that lives outside of the county, right? Just a simple filter. I get 10, 20, 30,000 records and you send letters to them and postcards. And there's different methodologies and thoughts behind all of this. Some people prefer to send a blind offer. I prefer to send a neutral letter or a neutral postcard, which means I'm just asking them, hey, text or call this 24-hour recorded voicemail. So in FreedomSoft, I get a phone number for each campaign. They text about 25-35% people text. The other 65-75% will call and leave a voicemail or just hang up. And so now I have their phone number. I do a lot of just following up and making offers. So what we do is when the call comes in from the postcard, and in my postcard, I'm not telling them to go to a website or email. It's just text or phone call. And we send a postcard. This is crazy. When I was doing direct mail for houses, we would get, if we were lucky, half of 1% response rate. So if we sent out 1,000 postcards, we would be lucky if we got 5 or 10 calls. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now with land,
getting about 10,
some 15%. Of our postcards, we're getting 5 to 6% response rates. Okay.
Oof.
Now some mail we send gets a 1% response rate, higher quality leads. Other mail that we send gets a 5 to 6% response rate, but lower quality leads. So it just six, one half dozen the other. But it's just a stinking numbers game. That's all it is. So we get 50 to 100 calls or text messages. We send out, if, let's say we got 50 calls, we'll send out about 30 offers and we'll get at least 2 of them accepted. So we're averaging 1 out of every 15 to 20 offers get accepted. And we're sending offers at about 35 to 40 cents on the dollar, right? Never more than 50% of what we feel like the property can sell for. And the thing with land is the seller is so much more removed from that, right? It's like they've never lived there.
They bought
it so long ago, and they've not poured hundreds of thousands of dollars into rehabbing it and fixing it up. And they're just done with it. They just want to get rid of it. And so the marketing for us is really simple. Just a lot of direct mail. We send postcards. I have this secret postcard that's just working like crazy right now. If you go, I don't know if I should say, but I will anyway. If you go to Google and just do a search for Third Notice postcard, it's a postcard that used to be really popular probably 3, 4, 5 years ago in the housing space. And it's an ugly, obnoxious yellow postcard that doesn't even say why you're mailing them. It just says, hey, we've been trying to reach you about your 2.6 acre property in XYZ city. It's important that we talk to you. Call us right now. Call this 24-hour recorded voicemail. That's all it says. And then the voicemail, when they call, says, hey, when you want to sell your property, you're normally faced with 2 options, sell it yourself or sell it with a realtor. Now, you have a third option. We'd like to make an offer and buy your property. So if you'd like to sell your land, give us the reference number on that postcard and we'll send you an offer. And that's it. So they don't even know what the postcard's about until they call. So that's why we get a high response rate with that postcard. It also gets a lot of angry calls. But we get a lot of calls coming in. We make a lot of, we call them back. We send them offers. And then we follow up like a machine. We do a lot of follow up. So does that answer the question?
Yeah. And then that gets into a speed to lead conversation whenever you get into the automation and the delegation. I love it. And what I love the most about it is your freaking numbers.
Yeah.
That is what I love the most about it, because show me a business owner that doesn't know their numbers and that's just another self-employee.
No. You don't know your numbers, you don't have a real business.
Yeah, you don't have anything. So I love everything that you just said, because there is no emotion to it. We've got a student of ours, Jake, in Action Academy. We do land flipping as well. And he sent out his last campaign and got 2 under contract in Japan while he was over in Japan. 2
under contract from Japan?
Yeah, from Japan. While he was visiting Japan, he got him over here in a rural county that he was sending out mailers to. So he's doing the same thing that you're talking about, where I know if I send 5,000 mailers, here's how many will respond. And then when they respond, I know that statistically, if we talk to 50 people, we'll get 2 deals out of it. So then it's just, okay, how many mailers do I need to send to get a deal? Right. Yeah. And it's the same thing over and over again with any business, any lead generation. It's the same thing with multifamily, same thing with mobile home parks, same thing with self-storage. It's how many people are you talking to? How many mailers and direct mail are you sending? How many do you have to send to get a person on the phone? And then out of those people on the phone, how many close into a freaking sales conversation?
Yeah, exactly. I like to simplify it even a little bit more and say it's just, when I talk to people who are just getting started, I say your speed to income is directly proportional to the number of offers that you make. Okay.
Period. Bingo.
That's all that matters. So you need to track. If there's one number to track, it's how many offers have you made in the last week? Right.
Bingo.
And if you want to do deals, you just got to make offers. And so when your focus is on making offers, then everything else kind of falls into place, right? Because, all right, I got to make 15 offers to do a deal. And if you don't have the money for direct mail, you'll get creative and you'll find a way to make offers. Maybe it's just cold calling. Maybe it's going after realtors with older vacant land listings. And maybe it's going after for sale by owners. It's just hanging out in Facebook groups. Whatever it is, if I want to do deals, if I want to eat today, if I want to eat this month, I need to make 30 offers. So how am I going to make 30 offers? And you just get to it. That's all that matters. When I have somebody that's, all, oh, this doesn't work, this is too hard.
Not sending enough offers.
You're not. How many offers have you sent in the last week? None. And this happens a lot for people that are starting to do deals.
Yeah.
They like get a bunch of properties under contract. They're all excited. They're marketing them. They're starting to get some leads. But maybe not all the properties are selling. Maybe they offered too much or whatever. And then they turn around and their pipeline's empty. Now they're stressed and freaking out because they were counting all of this money to come in and it's not come in yet. And now they realize, oh, shoot, I've not done any marketing in a long time. And they turn around, their pipeline's empty. And you ask them, how many offers have you made in the last month? And they're like, none. I haven't made any offers in 2 or 3 months. And now this is something that if somebody can figure out, if you talk to somebody who's consistently doing deals, they know how many offers they have to make to do a deal. And then they work backwards from there and how much marketing they have to do. It's so simple.
Yep. And it's funny because it's something that we were running into because a lot of our folks can't find any deals. You're not going to get a deal. You're not going to make a deal unless you make the offer that makes the deal. So if you got a property if you got a plot of land or even a property that's 100,000, 200,000, and that's what it's listed for on the MLS, wherever it's listed, even on Craigslist, LoopNet, wherever. And then you are like, okay, this doesn't work for me. I'm going to offer 70%, 70 cents on the dollar, 60 cents on the dollar. Send the offer.
So there are so many deals right now on the MLS or on LoopNet. Oh, yeah. Just here's the thing too. If you're doing houses, get on everybody's wholesale list. Anybody that's doing wholesaling, get on their lists. And when they send the deal out, it's not worth 75 grand. Make an offer for 50. So always be making offers. Like Jerry Norton is a good friend, and maybe you know him too, but I was in Puerto Rico and we hung out. The guy's a real deal. One of the things that he always tells his people is if you can make 100 offers, I guarantee you'll do a deal. And so if you made 5 offers a day, I always get my numbers screwed up here. That's 25 offers a week, and that's 100 offers a month, right? Mm-hmm. 5 offers a day. Now, how on earth could you make 5 offers a day? So easy and simple. Get on Redfin, look for properties that need updating, that need work. It's not taken, there's no professional photos, it's bad pictures taken with an iPhone. There's no interior photos. Something's wrong with the property.
Yeah, listed 60 days or further.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you could go and just say, show me all the properties that have had a price reduction. They've been on the market over 30 days and have had a price reduction. Over 60 days, over 90, over 6 months. And just find properties that are not your normal retail buyer would buy. And this has been a hot market. If that property hasn't sold in 3 months, there's something wrong with it. And so the reason why it hasn't sold is just overpriced. And so you need to go in and start making offers and just call these realtors up. And this is the power of this, because a lot of time the deals won't come from that conversation for that house. They'll come from the networking that you're doing with those realtors that you're calling, right? So this is how the conversation goes. Hey, Jim, I'm calling about this property, whether it's houses or land, right? It looks like a nice property. What's the story? Why hasn't it sold yet? I'm an investor. I'm looking to buy some deals in the area. What's going on? Is there something wrong with it? I don't know what's going on. That we've gotten offers as a seller. What offers have the seller rejected? Sometimes there's a tenant in the property or it just needs too much work. I say, listen, how negotiable is the seller on their price? I can't tell you that. Okay, listen, I don't have a realtor representing me right now in this area. So I don't know if this will work, but if you can represent me, you can get both sides of the commission. This is called the double dip strategy. The realtor can get both sides of the commission if you represent my offer. That wouldn't work, would it? Yeah, we can maybe do that. I'm looking to buy a property. How much? So I asked the realtor a ton of questions. I let them know I'm a serious investor. And I'm looking at comps while I'm talking to the realtor. And I'm saying, I'm looking at a similar property down the street. I know they're asking 75, but I see a similar property here for 60. Can you just be honest with me? Why would I want to pay 75 for your client's property when I can buy this one for 60? Or when I'm looking at sold comps here, I see a bunch of solds in the $40,000 to $50,000 range. What's the story? What's going on here? So usually the way this conversation ends, and I'm getting to my point, is go ahead and just send me an offer and I'll just present the offer. Let's just see what happens. I say, okay, great. So I'll email the realtor, not a contract, but just like the ballpark of what I need to be at. And I'll say, listen, would you just talk to the owner and see if they could get somewhere around here? And then I say to the realtor, listen, if you find any other off-market properties for me and you bring them to me, I'll pay you, I like to tell land realtors, I'll pay them 10% commissions, which is a big commission, but usually they're cheaper properties. So do you have any other off-market properties that maybe aren't on the MLS yet, nobody knows about yet? I would say 5-6 times out of 10, that realtor is going to say, yeah, you know what? I do. Or I know somebody. Or yeah, you know what? Let me think about it. Because I'm telling them I'll pay you 10% commissions if you bring me a good deal. And these realtors don't like listing vacant land because they take forever to sell. There's very small commissions on those things. They would rather just sell them to me, right? So this is the power of making offers. If you can just call 5 realtors a day and make ridiculous lowball offers on these properties that they're listing that haven't sold yet, you're going to do deals. And you're going to get 1 out of 100 that say, okay, yeah, I'll sell my property for half of what they had it list for. But then you're also going to get 1 or 2 out of 100 that are going to be like, hey, you know what? We talked last week. I just found another property. And now that you're starting to build your database of realtors, you start reaching out to them once a month. You send a text, you send an email. Hey, how's it going? Brian here. You probably don't remember me. I'm looking for deals. Do you have anything? I'm looking for some off-market discounted properties. I'm looking for deals that need work. Do you have anything? And this kind of relentless follow-up now, as you're talking to people, you'll start doing a ton of deals from the network that you're building and the number of people that you're talking to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's spot on. I just didn't want to interrupt. You were just on a roll there.
I'm talking way too much, but
that's everything. That's a good podcast.
All right.
That's perfect, man. That is every single thing step by step that somebody needs to do a deal. Period.
It's
in any.
You don't have to spend any money on that, right?
How much any does it cost asset to go to Redfin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing too. If you go to homes.com, you can go and search for properties that have been on the market over 3 months, over 6 months, that have had a price reduction in the last 30 days. And you can find a bunch of them. The cool thing about homes.com is it gives you the realtor's phone number and emails. You can't do that. You can't find that on Redfin or Zillow. So this is, I don't know why homes.com does it, but now I can get the listing agent's phone number. And it's so easy now to just call these guys and talk to them. And here's the other thing I tell the realtor. I say, listen, I know my offer is going to be really low and it's probably going to make the seller really mad. But if anything, this might even help you sell this listing faster. If your client is seeing a lowball price, they're going to realize maybe that their price is too high and they need to come back down to earth a little bit.
Aligning incentives. So,
yeah, just giving them. And then now I have the phone number and that realtor knows me and I'm just going to be following up with them. Hey, do you got any deals? Are you looking for anything? Do you have any off-market deals that I might be interested in that need a lot of work? You don't want to list it. Just call me. I'll pay you generous 10% commissions. If it's a house, I'll pay you 8% commissions. Something unheard of. And they'll start bringing you deals.
Yeah. And you don't have to do this with, And you don't have to do this with hundreds. You don't have to do this with hundreds and hundreds of people. Like the money, the dollars are in the follow-up and the data. Right. Yes. So it's just like in any counties that you guys are targeting, you can like there's only a handful of people, maybe a couple dozen at max that are running those areas. And you've got the 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 guys and gals that are the freaking primo people in that market. And that applies with businesses, too. So it's
I know a guy who's one of his best clients. He coaches in land space. All she does is gets on the phone and instead of cold calling homeowners or landowners, she's cold calling realtors. She gets a list of all the realtors in whatever market she's focusing on and just calls all the realtors and says, hey, my name is Jane or whatever her name is. And I am a land investor. I'm looking for vacant land. Do you ever run across listing or people that want to sell their land and you just don't want to list it? if I could give you my name and contact information, would you let me know? I'll pay you 8 to 10% commissions on any land listings that come your way that you don't want to deal with or hassle with. And that's all she does. And she gets, and then she follows up with them every month. Hey, I'm looking for vacant land. If you got anything off market, let me know. These realtors, the top producing agents, all they want to do is list houses, right? And yeah. They get a client that says, hey, I got this land. Will you help me sell it? What are they going to think? No, you know what? I don't want to list it, but I know somebody who wants to buy it.
Yeah. And they're all hurting right now. They want to eat. I'll tell you what else is happening. And then we'll wrap this up, but we'll close it with this. This is another really good one. Where my buddies are calling, they're calling on the bridge debt lenders.
Ooh.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So
explain, this is really good. Explain what a bridge loan is. I know what it is, but.
Yeah. So for anybody that's a multifamily right now, like where's the big cause of distress? Like you want to skate to where the puck is going, right? So what's going to be the largest cause of distress? It's going to be all this bridge debt coming due, which when you're buying these multifamily properties, these giant 100 plus unit apartment complexes, they're all buying these in triple net lease centers on 3 to 5 year loans. And those loans, normally what they do is they'll refinance, they'll increase the NOI, then they'll refinance the loan and they'll pay back the investors in 3 to 5 years. That's how a normal multifamily transition goes. But now, because of the interest rates, people have increased the NOI, but now they're going to default on their bridge loans. So they can't pay it back. They can't refinance the debt. So now what my buddy's doing is, dude, I'm becoming best friends with every bridge lender that I can find because they don't want to offload that on their books. Like they want somebody to assume those loans so that they can take it over and that they can be able to take that and say, hey, I've got this all day. I'm liquid. I'll take your loan. That's dude, awesome. Same thing as calling the realtors. You're planting your seeds with the people that are making the harvest. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God. So it's called the flap your lips method, right? If you could just talk to 5 people a day, whether it's a lender, hard money lender, realtor, landlord, property manager, like if you could just talk to 5 people a day, you not do deal. No. And so there's this guy I know, he's a hermit. He just likes to be in his cave playing video games. I don't know what he does. He comes out whenever he needs some money, he comes out of his cave and he's got a Rolodex, you know, it's not a Rolodex. It's like a list of 100 people, whatever, that are active in the real estate business here in St. Louis. And he calls every single one of them and he asks them 2 questions. And he does this about once every couple months. He calls everybody and asks them 2 simple questions. Number 1, all right, I'm looking for deals. Do you have anything? Or number 2, are you looking to buy any deals right now? And then eventually, by the time he calls all 100 people or whatever the number is, he'll find somebody that has a deal they want to sell and he'll find somebody that has a deal they want to buy. Or maybe somebody that has money they want to lend, or some kind of distressed property or something in their portfolio they'd love to get rid of, and they'll find somebody else who wants that. And he just puts them together. That's all he does. He gets on the phone and just starts calling everybody he knows in the business and says, do you have a deal? I'm looking to buy a deal. Do you have anything? Or do you have any deals that you're looking to sell? It's that simple. It's that easy. Just talk to 5 people a day and I guarantee you'll do deals. And then everybody you talk to, send them an offer. That's at least an email or a text that says, hey, you know what? I'm interested in that property, but I'm going to need to be in this kind of this price range. That probably wouldn't work, would it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Easy peasy. Lemon squeezy.
And it's also, in closing, I want to punctuate what you said is that 10% commission. But you said this multiple times, and I've heard this multiple times before. Instead of eating the whole pie yourself, take a slice out of 40 different pies. Yep. You have more, infinitely more pie than that one Costco pie you got in front of you. And now you're able to eat and you ain't cooking it. They're cooking it for you and they're just handing it to you on a silver platter. So remember, when you're talking to these realtors, always align incentives. And that's what you're making sure to do. If they don't have the deal, or if that deal that you're talking about ain't going to work, you're making sure they know, hey, by the way, I paid 10% on this. Mm-hmm. We may not do something here, but I ain't going away. You're going to hear from me. Go over here. Joe, where can people find out more about you? They're loving what you're saying. Where can they hear more? Where can they find out more about what you do?
I'm really into YouTube these days. So just go to my YouTube channel. If you go to joemccall.tv, joemccall.tv, that'll redirect you to my YouTube channel. I'm doing a lot more podcasts and educational content. I have a professional video guy that's with me now. So I'm doing a lot of content on YouTube. I talk a lot about land. So that might be the best, YouTube.
Cool. All right, awesome. And guys, we'll have that link in the show description. And do you want to plug the podcast too?
Yeah, Real Estate Investing Mastery. I've been doing it for 13 years now. And I love doing podcasts. You're going to be on my show, mm-hmm. I think, this week. I don't remember. I have to look at my calendar.
Yeah, this week or next. I think we booked for next. But yeah, we'll rock it out. Round two.
Yeah, so just wherever you listen to podcasts, do a search for Joel McCall or Real Estate Investing Mastery, and you'll find my show.
Beautiful. So guys, we'll have the YouTube link and the podcast link at the show description. Go like, subscribe, follow the video. As always, leave us a 5-star rating or review. Leave one for Joe as well. And most importantly, if we're talking about five people a day, call them, make millions of dollars, be financially free, take your kids to Europe. Guys, Thank you so much for coming on. Joe, thank you, sir.
Hey, Brian, it's fun. Thank you, man.
It's been Brian and Joe with the Action Academy podcast. As always, signing off. Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to today's episode, I'm assuming you got value from it, so I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this show is to help over 1 million people do what they want, when they want, with who they want, and I can only do that with your help. There are 2 main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you could please leave me a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 or 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the people that we're looking to reach. Thanks in advance. Talk tomorrow.